think that now, in this period with the corona and even during the wars, I don't think that the relationship between me and the patient is symmetry, even if we have to face the same danger, the same external danger. I think that relationships continue to be asymmetric. I think that I manage the treatment. I decide the setting. I continue to be the analyst.
Welcome to the IPA podcast. For those of you who have been listeners to the past 40 episodes of this podcast series, you know that we've been focusing on analysts who bring their clinical skills to venues outside of the consulting room, hence the name psychoanalysis on and off the couch. Given that we are all facing together a crisis of unfathomable proportions, we're going to be changing the focus of our podcast. We are going to be interviewing psychoanalysts from all corners of the globe to discuss with them how their local communities are coping with this situation, how their clinical work has been affected by this situation, and also how the internal worlds of both the analyst and the patient have been impacted by this virus, as it impacts both our real fears and our imaginary fears. We're going to encounter not only uncertainty and fear, but we're also going to learn great wisdom, gifted empathy, and hope. We'll be maintaining the title of this podcast, both as a testament to our past work and as a placeholder for our future work. I hope you find these conversations both informative and sustaining. Feel free to write comments on our webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org. Thank you. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Harvey Schwartz, and my guest today is Dr. Yael Samuel. Dr. Samuel is a training analyst at the Israeli Psychoanalytic Society, and she works full-time in private practice as an analyst in Tel Aviv. She is a member of the training committee there and is in charge of the new candidates, their programs, and teachers. Dr. Samuel is also the co-founder and manager of the nonprofit organization L'chol Nefesh, which translates for every soul. This is a program designed to bring psychoanalytic psychotherapy to a larger population of often psychotic patients, and she has been managing for 7 years a treatment unit in a psychiatric hospital under the auspices of L'chol Nefesh. Actually, this program, L'chol Nefesh, was the subject of the second conversation on this podcast series with her colleague, Ilan Amir, who also joined with her in founding this program. It's quite remarkable, actually. Dr. Samuel is also the Israeli Psychoanalytic Society representative to the Congress of French Psychoanalytic Speakers, and I got to know Yael because we are together on the IPA and Health Committee. And as you'll hear in our conversation today, Yael shares with us the unique Israeli perspective on facing this crisis. They have faced many crises before, and that brings a certain esprit to their work together and to their fortitude together. And you will hear towards the end of the interview some dramatic examples of some of the prior trauma they've had to deal with as analysts in the analytic patient diet. With great pleasure, here is my interview with Dr. Yael Samuel. Yael, welcome to the podcast. It's a pleasure to have you with us. Yael, our medical colleagues, the interventionalists, the ICU physicians, the ER doctors, in the face of this crisis, have established of necessity new and rapid ways of communicating with each other. They're not in a position to wait for journals that take months to publish new findings. They've had to be in touch with each other, and they have. They've set up all kinds of online communications, and they've learned and shared things with each other. They've learned about how to use the pressures on ventilator machines better. They've learned about drug combinations that might be useful. They've learned about cardiac and neurologic manifestations of this virus. And we analysts as well have also had to adapt. And we too have set up rapid online communications with each other. We've had town halls and webinars and listservs, and even this podcast is designed not only to offer our analyst colleagues around the world support in this precarious time, but also to share new findings from this new acute situation. And we have shared new findings. We've learned from each other. We've learned about what it's like to suddenly transform our practice to an online practice with all the questions of using visual, using audio, the legal mechanisms, the privacy mechanisms. That's one thing that we learned. We've learned about the impact of this new system on the preludes to our sessions. Patients no longer walk or drive to our sessions. They don't sit in waiting rooms with their own thoughts and encounter people coming and going. That's been a dramatic change, both for patient and analyst as well. And one of the other things we've heard from colleagues around the world is that another difference is that there's a certain symmetry that's been introduced to the relationship, and that is that both analyst and analysand are both subject to danger. We together, it's not just the patient's trauma, it's humanity's trauma. And one of the things that I've learned, and we'll learn more about today, is that some of our colleagues around the world have past experience with this. Israeli analysts have had experience struggling with their patients under simultaneous danger. You've sat with patients in the anticipation of being bombed. You, and I say you individually and also collectively, the Israeli analytic community, has sat with patients not only in the anticipation of being bombed, but so I learned, with the actual experience of both being bombed. That sort of relates to our current situation. We will talk about that in a little bit, but first, share with us, if you will, what life is like in Israel, what life is like in Tel Aviv, and then we'll talk about the analytic community in Israel and Tel Aviv.
Okay. Thank you, Harvey, for interviewing me. The situation in Israel is, I think, like everywhere around the world. We began more than 1 month ago the lockdown, and we are not allowed to be out of our houses more than under meters, and all the meetings are cancelled, and we are locked down at home. We can only go to buy food or to the pharmacy. And it is a very, very strange situation for all of us, because I think that it is first time, in spite of all the wars, that we are confined, that we are in our houses and we can't go out. All the Israeli people, they are very disciplined. They obey very well to the orders and to the measures, because we are used to obey and to take care of ourselves and to protect ourselves. And this time we protect ourselves, I think, well too.
Is that why the ratings I've seen, and I don't take them literally, but I assume they mean something, that something about the Israeli intervention, maybe how early it was, has led to Israel being one of the safest places in the world to be in the face of this virus? Does that match what you're hearing?
I think that one of the reasons that, I don't know, I think that they took the measures on time. It's the first thing. The second thing is that, once again, the Israeli people, they obey. they stayed home and they didn't work out. And I think that we have also enough ventilators, enough beds in the hospitals, enough masks, enough tests. And I heard that time, I don't know if it is really the truth, but what we know here is it is that the secret agency, the Mossad, traveled all around the world and they found all these materials. And it is the reason why we don't have to worry about test masks, beds, and the ventilators. We have all what we need here in Israel.
Yes, I read that story as well, that the Mossad made this a project to make sure that the Israeli health service was well-stocked. And when I read it, I imagined if I were an Israeli, I'd be pleased on two bases. First, that the facilities and the materials are there because they're needed in literal form, but also sort of the spirit of being taken care of by this powerful agency that is delivering the goods must have been a morale booster at this time as well. I don't know that, but I imagine that would be my experience.
Yes, and also we have something like in Taiwan. I think that in Taiwan they have the same technique. We have an app, an application, and this application tell us if we were in contact in somebody infected.
An app on your phone, yes.
Yes, on our iPhone. And also this app, if somebody has had to be in quarantine, and if he don't stay in quarantine, there is a beep in his iPhone, in his phone, that he has to stay in quarantine. But I think that it is a way to detect, if, for example, every second, I can see on my phone if I was in contact this morning or yesterday if somebody is infected. And if it is the case, I have to go and to the doctor and to have a test and so on. And I think that it helps. But I think that the more important, I say that we don't have so much sick people. I think that we have about 10,000 people infected, and unfortunately something like 120 or 30 people who died. But I don't think that we have so many sick people. It is not like in France, Spain, or in Italy.
Yes. Tell us about the analytic community. What's been the response in the face of this?
And when we knew that we have to stay at home, we organized our activities. I am a member of the training committee, and we immediately organized the training online. And we have five groups of candidates, and immediately we organized the semester, because the semester had to begin, and we organized all the seminars, theoretical seminars, clinical seminars, and for the candidates, in 1 week, all was okay, and they began to learn. And about our conferences, it took maybe 2 weeks to organize all the conferences, all the other activities online. But of course now it's okay. We can go in our house to all the conferences of the society.
I'm sorry, just to make sure, are you saying that people are now meeting together, or you go to your house and have a conference online?
With Zoom meeting.
Yeah, with Zoom. Right, that's what I understood. Yeah. Okay.
All it's I want to say all is normal, but not normal, but all the activities of the society continued in this period. I teach every week, and I see my candidates on my screen. And at the beginning, it was a little bit difficult, of course, but now we are used to teach with the Zoom. And
have you been in touch with each other about this change situation?
Of course, we are lot of groups. There are a lot of groups, and I don't have time to participate to all the forums. There are a lot of forums in various subjects, remote analysis and psychoanalysis in this period, and so on and so on. There are a lot of groups, and the psychoanalysts are in touch, of course, all the time. All the time there are discussions, all the time. But it is difficult. It is difficult to be in all these forums. Impossible.
I hear you. And what about personally for you? What's the transition been like in terms of working with patients and changing to online status?
Okay, I told my patients that it was gradually. At the beginning, I received in my house, in my consulting room, some patients, and after 1 week, I stopped to see all my patients, and I proposed phone talks. I prefer the phone, especially for the analysis. I don't like I don't like to see my patients so close.
Mm-hmm. Yes, people have commented on that.
Yeah, can. I don't like, and I proposed phone calls, and it works. They all agree to continue with phone calls, and I had some difficult moments. Maybe I can tell you one of these moments.
Sure.
One of my patients, a young man, told me that he feels abandoned, alone, and that he's angry. And he kept silence. And I felt that I am diving in a black hole, that I feel what Bion called a nameless dread. I was in this silence. It was terrible, because it is not the same silence as your patient is physically present. It was, the void. And I felt I was afraid. I didn't know what to do, what to say, and I don't know how long it lasts. But maybe after 2 minutes, I said, "I am here." But it was a very. I thought about this experience after because it was very difficult. That he kept silence, and I lost him. And I also thought that he let me feel what it is to be abandoned, to be alone, to be in a black hole. And it was a very difficult experience for me, this silence. And the silence are difficult, because
yes,
we are...
Yes, they are different.
We have only our ears, and we don't have all our senses.
Did it end up being productive in terms of alerting both of you to something in his past that hadn't been uncovered, that the silence and the abandonment, while being stimulated by the current situation, may have been a useful path to discover something new in his life?
Yes, we spoke about that after, and I think also that the more the personality, the more neurotic is the personality, and it's easier to have phone calls. And if the pathology is preneurotic, more preneurotic pathologies, it is more difficult because the phone is like a surge, okay? And the patient have to bear the third. And if he needs to be more in a symbiotic relationship, the phone is much more difficult because introduces the third, a kind of third.
Mm. And yet, people have reported in both directions on this, that the intimacy of having the patient sort of in your ear, in your head, changes the experience for both parties. That I've had supervisees say that they're uncomfortable with that intimacy. They need the distance of either seeing someone on a screen or having someone at a physical distance. Is that something you have found as well?
It is difficult to say because I had different reactions of my patient, but I think that in some cases, the phone separates the patient and the analyst, and in with other patients, the phone make possible more intimacy. It depends. For me, it depends on which patient.
And also in the countertransference, the freedom, what I find is that the phone frees up one's mind to not be caught up in the literal and the visual,
yeah.
And to let your own mind.
Yeah, for me, I miss the presence of my patients.
Oh, terribly, yes.
I want to throw the Zoom. It's enough.
Yes,
enough with the Zoom. Okay.
I think that's something we feel from all around the world. We want to throw our Zooms away, for sure. Speaking of the visual and the literal, do you find that given the literal pressures that we're all under, including fears, that the relationship between the literal versus the metaphoric is it's realigned? That we're all struggling with the literal, and that makes it more challenging, perhaps for both parties, to play in the metaphoric realm.
I feel that I play less.
That's what I mean. Yes, you play less,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, yes, yes, yes. I play less. I am. It's tiring. I need much more concentration. I have to be more concentrated. Mm-hmm. I have less space. I have less space. To think, because I have to become more concentrated, and I would like also to speak about you know that we have an association, Le Chol Nefesh, and that we have units in the hospital, and we provide psychotherapies for people, for psychotic people.
Yes, let us tell us about that. That would be a unique analytic contribution to this crisis.
Yes, and we have. I manage one of these units with my colleague, and we have a staff of almost 20 psychotherapists, and they also proposed phone calls, and it. It is for them very, very, very difficult. As I told you, more the pathology is severe, and more difficult is to have a setting with the phone. And our psychotherapists really suffer with patients. Because the patients they don't answer to the phone, or they forget, or it is very chaotic, and it is very difficult for them to contain, and for the patients it is very difficult to be with the therapy online. And what we remarked also. But for these patients to come to the mental health service, to come to take a bus, it is one of the activity of the week, you know. And if they couldn't come physically, it is very, very difficult for them and they feel very alone.
This is sort of a day hospital setting for psychotic patients, is that right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So they're now being asked to do everything online, and it's particularly challenging for them and the therapists who work with them and that you supervise.
Yes.
Is that l'chol nefesh?
Yes.
Yes, yes. We we had an interview about l'chol nefesh in one of the earlier episodes. It's a remarkable program. I've had the pleasure to visit there, and it's
my colleague, Dr. Ilan Amir.
Yes, yes. It's very special.
Okay.
Can you tell us a little bit about that episode that I began this conversation with, about your past experiences where you and your analyst Anne's have operated under the threat and the actuality of being bombed?
Yes, I want to come back to the subject of the symmetry and asymmetry. I think that now, in this period with the corona, and even during the wars, I don't think that the relationship between me and the patient is asymmetric. Even if we have to face the same danger, the same external danger, I think that relationships continue to be asymmetric. I think that I manage the treatment. I decide the setting. I continue to be the analyst, and I don't think that the relationship is symmetry. I think that the relationship continue to be asymmetric. I think that the differences, of course, the difference is that we are under the same danger, and the effect of the patients could worry about me and to ask me if I am okay, if my family is okay. Of course, it changes something in the relationship, but not the symmetry or the asymmetry. Mm-hmm. And I want also to add that for me, I am much less less frightened by the corona than by the war. Because the corona, we know what we have to do. We have to stay home. And we know how to protect ourselves, and I know also how to protect my patients. But when we have a war, like the last war, we had alarms, and I had to take my patients in a shelter. And when you are in a shelter, you don't know if the Scud missile will fall on your roof or not. It is much more frightening than the corona.
And it's a fright that you and your patient in your own way are experiencing together.
Yes. Well, with the corona it's not the same. So what my patients experience is the corona in his side and I and my son. But when we are together in the shelter and eventually sometimes with my family, it is completely another experience. And when it occurred at the last war, we had to speak a lot about that, about to be together in the shelter.
So you, your family, and your patient were together in a shelter.
Yeah. Well, when my son went out from the showers and he was only with a towel around his body.
Just to add a little twist to it, right? Yael, This is, I mean, though we operate under the thought, and obviously there's some truth to it, but not as much truth as we would like, that we can protect ourselves and our loved ones from danger, not to mention severe sickness or death. We are all facing discomforts and anxieties and uncertainties. Is there anything in particular that you'd like to share that you feel sustains you, your community, your family, in the face of this current crisis?
What? Yes, I live in my house with my husband. We are together to face this danger. I am in contact, of course, with my son, my sons, with my friends. My work, of course, how to say that? I have the chance to work, and I feel also that I am dependent of my patients, my work as the society, the other psychoanalysts, and also I'm moving by the solidarity. In Israel, all over the world, and also I am impressed by the creativity. Of course, like me, you receive poems, songs, videos, and paintings, jokes all the time, and I am impressed by this creativity, and I am optimistic, and I know that we will overcome this this crisis. And I'm optimistic when I see all this inventive and all this creativity and solidarity.
What a lovely closing note for us. Not only do you describe the challenges and the creativity of your work, but you're describing the entire community, both the analytic community, your personal community, and the Israeli community, joining together to celebrate the positive and to bear together the fears and anxieties, which, unfortunately, as you say, you have a history with.
Yes.
And I also want to mention and acknowledge my pleasure in getting to know you and working with you on the IPA and Health Committee, which has been a pleasure for me.
Okay.
Yael, thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing. Be well.
Thank you. Thank you, Harvey, and be well. And I hope that we will meet, we'll meet soon.
Hopefully we will be able to meet soon. I look forward to it. All my best. Thank you for listening. If I may, I'd like to ask you to help us publicize our podcast by rating us on iTunes or simply sharing it with a friend. You can also visit our webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can both subscribe and also add your comments. I'd also like to acknowledge the lovely rendition of Beethoven's Opus 18th String Quartet by the Allegri String Quartet on the Vivat label.